You're listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Thanks for downloading the show. I'm Rob Daly. This week on your European football podcast, the Bundesliga is back and BT Sports Archer Rin Tutt is here, having seen Dortmund's win at Gladbach. And alongside me today is Chris Parrott.
Yep, great weekend for Barcelona in Spain. It's 11 wins in a row for Juventus, and Hatem Ben Arfa start again in Ligue 1.
We have a special interview with Andrew Driver, the former Hearts player, who's now playing his football in the Eredivisie with De Graafschap. And we'll go through your tweets on the show.
This is Football in Europe.
Chris, it's nice to have you back alongside me this week on the podcast.
Yes, I've been absent. Turkey, work, and then holiday.
Yeah, too many holidays.
Not enough holidays.
You also told me on WhatsApp yesterday that lilt gives you a sore throat.
A lilt does give me a sore throat. I hadn't had it for years. So I was like, I'll have a lilt.
Mm.
Had a commentary the next day. Mm. Honestly, it... like when you thought...
Sorry, you had a lilt the day before and thought...
this might be... I could be in trouble
lilt
here.
Lilt-related.
Lilt-related. Yeah, it's like when you were 16, you had your first cigarette. You're like, oh, that's giving me a sore throat. I don't know if that happened to you as well, but yeah.
it was the first cigarette.
But it's something to do with... it's probably about the 19 gallons of sugar in it. But no, I have not touched lilt since. And nor should you.
Oh, that's bloody refreshing.
That's a tea, mate. That's a tea.
And if lilt would like to sponsor... oh, God, what a lovely drop. Chris, at the weekend we both did a bit of work on the Bundesliga...
And I was
at Goodison Park on Sunday to see Francesco Guidolin's first game in charge of Swansea, and they won two in a row. But I do think, really, considering Alan Curtis came up with a system that was able to beat Everton and Watford, that he probably does deserve the credit for the two wins. You have a theory about what happened with the appointment of Guidolin to Swansea, because to me it seemed like a bit of a mess from Swansea giving Curtis the job to the end of the season, then bringing in Guidolin, who's a very admired coach in Italy, particularly for what he did in Udinese in recent years. So what do you think happened there?
Well, maybe I do have a soft spot. I covered Swansea for a number of years. I think they're a club to be admired. They play football in, as we know, the right way, etc. Not spent loads of money.
Mm.
And I just wonder, Hugh Jenkins is a very shrewd operator. And I just wonder if it threw everybody off the scent saying Curtis had the job until the end of the season. He's a club legend. He gets it. He would have been happy to do it. But all of a sudden, instead of all the newspaper reports being about, oh, Bielsa's turned them down.
Which he did.
Yeah, he did. But, you know, Hugh Jenkins is flying to South America, to Italy, wherever. All of that negative speculation about the club. Actually, they're like, oh, all the press were like, Curtis has got it now. And they could almost go about their business under the radar.
And choose, get Guidolin.
Choose who they really wanted. And then it was almost as if, oh, they've appointed Guidolin. You know, there was very little speculation. Suddenly, he's in the hot seat. And I just can't believe, having covered them, they're so well run. Because it did seem a mess. And I just wonder if it was all part of the plan. Throw everyone off the scent, get your man.
It'll be interesting to see how he does in the Premier League. He got Udinese into the top three in the Champions League spots during his most recent spell as manager in Serie A. Speaking of Serie A, Chris, we've been asking people for their tweets for this week's show, and we'll get to as many of your tweets as we can. We've had this one from Derek Patterson. He says, is it fair to say Juve are firm Serie A favourites now? Roma are in some sort of malaise. Early days for Spalletti, though. Spalletti, of course, back as manager, as we mentioned last week on the show. On Sunday night, Juve beat Roma 1-0 with a late goal from Dybala.
Yeah, Dybalissimo in Le Gazzetta dello Sport. He's absolutely on fire. Yes, I would say they are title favourites. I know Napoli are top and they've won five in a row and they have every right to believe they can make it a third title in their history. But I just think with the experience that Juventus have and 11 straight wins is an unbelievable record, given how poor they were at the start of the season. I've backed Napoli all season, but I think in terms of if you were to say a title favourite, probably Juve right now. Dybala's got 6 in 7 in Serie A. And I saw an interview with Gigi Buffon, who said that his dad rang him up when they signed Dybala from Palermo.
Buffon's dad,
and was really excited. And Buffon says he was more excited than me, to be honest. But I'd imagine it's changed now, because at 22, they needed someone, didn't they? Tevez left. They needed someone to really lead that line, and he's really beginning to do it. Certainly wouldn't discount Napoli. Great win for them away at Sampdoria 4-2. And I don't think you can discount Fiorentina either. OK, it's a push. They're definitely third favourites, maybe even fourth in some people's eyes. But certainly those Champions League places for them would be a huge boost under Paulo Sousa. And they've signed Mauro Zarate and Christian Teo, the former Barca man now at Porto, which looks pretty good business.
It does. So if they want to reach the Champions League spots. Let's talk about Sarri, the head coach of Napoli, very briefly, because I think many neutrals did want Napoli to win the title. They like the idea, the romance of the idea of Napoli winning the title. But during the Coppa Italia game with Inter, and people probably did see this, he was accused of making homophobic comments towards Roberto Mancini towards the end of that game in the Coppa Italia. Now, Sarri's been handed a 2-game ban. He has apologised, an apology that they've accepted. But he also used the old excuse. He says, how can I be homophobic? I have gay friends.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a...
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
It reminds me of a line in The Office where Finchie says to someone, or maybe Brent's quoting him, he says, how can I hate women? My mum's one. It's a little bit like that. But, I mean, not great for Napoli.
No, and actually, I agree. I think, in a way, a certain amount of the romance has gone for some people. And Sarri, who was being seen as, well, done an absolutely exceptional job there, a coach with some different ideas. I think he has apologised, which is good. I think he wore Roberto Mancini's scarf that he gave him as well. But I think in terms of PR, it wasn't the best week for Napoli. And who knows? Yeah, I'd agree with you. Certainly for me, anyway. A bit of the romance of them claiming the Scudetto has gone.
It has. And at the weekend as well, there were draws for the Milan clubs. Inter were held at home by Carpi, or the best pun name in Italy, Kevin Lasagna, scoring a 90th minute winner equaliser at Inter. And Milan drew 2-2 at Empoli. Milan Inter next week, Chris. I mean, the Milan derby doesn't quite carry the weight, perhaps, it did in previous years.
No, Sunday. And given how much they both spent in the summer, you know, they were looking definitely for European football. They were looking for Champions League football, let's be honest, and a title challenge. Inter have started recently. It is still 4th v 6th, and they're both in the Coppa Italia semi-finals, which is a route to Europe. But I'd be surprised if both in the league finished in the top five. You know, someone would have to drop out for that to happen. So it is a big, big game, and certainly for both coaches as well. Inter stuttering hasn't quite happened all season for AC Milan.
Yeah, I'm sure I saw Mancini complaining about his strikers, about he feels he's not getting enough goals. Which has, I mean, they've been getting narrow wins all season, haven't they? So Napoli are top by 2 points in Serie A. Okay, let's focus on German football.
This is Football in Europe, Bundesliga Roundup.
Joining us now is BT Sports' Archie Rintut to talk about the return of the Bundesliga. Archie, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Chris. Pleasure as ever.
Excellent. So at the weekend, mate, you're at the game of the weekend in Borussia Mönchengladbach against Borussia Dortmund. Dortmund beat them 4-0 on the opening day of the season. But it's been a very different Gladbach since then. So how did this one pan out?
Yes, this game was a little bit tighter. And in fact, Dortmund won without dominating it as such. But they still had enough to get past this Gladbach side. And I think that is a good quality and a really good sign for Borussia Dortmund. Because under Jurgen Klopp, we saw so many times, particularly in the last few years, how unless they were at that very top level, they weren't able to get past sides, able to eke those sort of results out. But I wouldn't say this was so much of an eking as such. They did have enough comfortably to pass them in the end. Marco Reus, Ilkay Gundogan and Henrik Mkhitaryan, three star names and all coming out with a goal as well. But Mats Hummels at the back, he's received a lot of criticisms this season, even if he is the best tackler in the league. I saw the statistic this weekend as well. But he was very good. But particularly for Hummels as well, being the club captain under plenty of pressure, particularly after a poor season last year, was an important performance by him.
I think they've scored 50 goals in 18 games, which is an amazing stat. And just how good are they then going forward? Are we talking, I don't know, a Barcelona or a Real Madrid at their free-flowing best, or even Paris Saint-Germain are banging in the goals? Would you put them right at the top in terms of European pedigree?
I think the way that they are able to skin the cat as such and being able to score has really increased, such as the adaptability that Thomas Tuchel brings to it. And I think they are also, in fact, I know they are also the only side in Europe's top five divisions to score in every single game this season. So I think that they are very much in that top bracket, that top echelon. It's just the problem is they're 8 points behind Bayern Munich, and that would suggest that they're not. But if you compare their points average to the Premier League in Italy, for example, they would be top at the moment with their points gained per game. So I think that particularly with the likes of Royce, Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan, they're so quick. Mkhitaryan was excellent on Saturday. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang was a little less so, particularly the chances that he missed in front of goal. But I think that that strength and depth of players being able to step forward and score a goal is really key for them.
As well, I mean, if we think back to the best Dortmund that we've seen in recent years, and you'd probably go back to Klopp 2012 or even 2013 when they reached the Champions League final, it was İlkay Gündoğan in the middle of midfield who was such a star, actually scored in that final against Bayern. He has been out for a long time with injury. It's probably his first full season back since that. Is he back to his very best?
I think he's certainly approaching it. You mentioned that injury layoff there, and there was a lot of talk that Gundogan was wanting to leave as well. And that's still not going to go away either, because he's one of three players, Hummels, Gundogan and Mkhitaryan, who all have their contracts up next summer, meaning that if Dortmund are going to cash in, then it looks like this summer would be the ideal point to do that. But I think that they will really want to hold on and keep Gundogan, such as the form that he's been in. Just the way that he's able to sit deep and control the game, but also after Thomas Tuchel made two substitutions on Saturday, he was able to drive forward and be effective from that little bit further on, as we saw him so memorably in that Champions League campaign. So I think that he's certainly approaching that level that we've seen before.
Archie, we'll get on to Mönchengladbach in a moment. They're still fourth, mostly because two teams who could have gone above them on Sunday, Schalke, lost to Werder Bremen at home. I did the Wolfsburg away at Eintracht Frankfurt. They really should have won that game. They were absolutely dominant in the first half, only 1-0 up. Julian Draxler came off shaking his head. He couldn't believe it. In the end, they lost. Alex Meyer with a hat-trick, scored with virtually the last kick of the game. Massive win for Eintracht Frankfurt. A 3-2 success. It was the Bundesliga at its very best. But it means Gladbach are still fourth. Do you think they will get that final Champions League place? They had such a bad start to the season. It's almost amazing that we're talking about them in that position.
It is, but it's difficult to call who exactly is going to get into the Champions League places, such as the flakiness of some of those sides around the top four at the moment in the Bundesliga. You look at the results that they had over the weekend. Only Bayern and Dortmund won in the weekend in the top half. It was actually the bottom half sides who really came up with the goods. But Gladbach especially, I think there are defensive problems there. I spoke to Oscar Wendt, their left-back, after the game. Individually, he's been outstanding this season. But he spoke of one or two individual mistakes that were the reasons for their defeat on Saturday. And he also said something which we probably can't say, which was that he said he didn't give a, and you can fill in the gap there, about what about his performance if the team had lost, which, you know, it's nice to show that you're a team player. But I think that there are defensive issues with Gladbach this season. I think they've conceded more goals this season than they did in the whole of last season, which is quite remarkable. And going forward, they're excellent, but I just don't know whether they quite have that balance yet at the back. And I know that quite a few Gladbach fans are unhappy about that, but they've still got a few players to come back. Alvaro Dominguez, though, is, I think, the key player for them at the back, that centre-back, because Nico Elvedi, 19 years old. OK, his centre-back partner, Christensen, is 19 as well, but they could have really done with him at the back on Saturday.
On the subject of teams qualifying for the Champions League, we've asked people to tweet in questions for Archie today. Jaco Hapala, forgive me for the pronunciation as well, asked, can Hertha keep their run going and achieve a Champions League place at the end of the season? They drew 0-0 with Augsburg at home at the weekend, and they're still third. But from memory, Archie, you have reservations about the longevity of their potential to stay in the top four.
I do still have reservations about their longevity, but given the fact that Leverkusen, Schalke and Wolfsburg all don't seem to have the ruthless streak required at the moment, there's no reason why they can't stay there, especially because they're 5 points clear of Leverkusen in fifth. And their result against Augsburg and 0-0 may not look like the best result, but Augsburg are a good side. So Hertha, I think they've got the potential to do this. I just still question, such as the way that in past seasons they've really dropped off in the Rückrunde of the second half of the season, I still question whether they quite have it to really finish the job. A bit like Leicester City, perhaps, in the Premier League.
Writing off Leicester at your peril, Archie. One team who will definitely be in the Champions League next season will be Bayern, of course. 2-1 winners over Hamburg to keep that points tally at the top of the table. Robert Lewandowski with both goals, 17 in 17. But Jerome Boateng injured. Just how big a blow might that be? They've of course, got Juventus coming up. I think they've got Bochum in the cup as well. So it's a big week's coming up, and Jerome Boateng's a huge player, isn't he?
Huge player for them defensively, but also the thing about Jerome Boateng is what he offers going forward. You look at their game against Borussia Dortmund earlier this season for Bayern Munich, 5-1, but Boateng was at the heart of that performance, just with these long raking balls that he was able to split the Dortmund defence with. That has been, I think, the real improvement of Boateng, particularly with Pep Guardiola since he's come in. But Boateng has been a key player throughout their Champions League success, their treble success in 2013, and he's been a real star of the team. So this is a real big blow for Bayern Munich. It'll be the question is, how is David Alaba going to cope if he's moved into centre-back again? He did very well last time, but it's going to put a real strain on the team because Juan Bernat is not quite the same player at left-back, so it could have consequences in other places.
Archie, some more questions are coming in on Twitter. Brian M. Sanders makes the point, would the Bundesliga benefit or not from one of the more established clubs getting relegated as they try to expand the league in the United States? It's big on Fox Sports this season. They've gone all out with their coverage. Brian goes on to say, Serie A has done all right, even with more and more tiny clubs surviving at the bigger clubs' expense. It's quite a difficult subject to get into at length at this point, Archie, but I suppose Brian's partly looking at the fact that Hamburg, one of the biggest teams in Germany, avoided relegation via a playoff because they don't have it quite like in England. They finished third from bottom and played a playoff against a team who finished third in Bundesliga 2. So do you think that playoff system is stopping that happening? Is it a good thing, that playoff system for relegation?
Well, if I was to look at it in very simplistic terms, I think a playoff would surely help sell the league in the US, no? Given the way that they have playoffs for ice hockey, American football and whatnot. But I think it's really important to keep the big clubs in the league to help it grow. You look at that atmosphere that really comes through your TV screens in the UK. I can tell you that it's even better in person as well. But I think that it'll be something that really helps to sell the league more than anything. Not having Hamburg go down, I think Hamburg staying in the league is actually a very good thing because they are a sleeping giant of it. And you've got other sleeping giants down there at the bottom, the likes of Werder Bremen and Stuttgart as well, clubs with really big fan bases. And I think that it's only good actually to have some of the bigger sides in the league. But that said, I'm really not averse to having a Darmstadt and Ingolstadt doing well because I do like to see an underdog performing in such a way that they have done this season.
And just one more for you, Archie. Mason Lemon says, who's been the best buy of the season so far in the Bundesliga? It's quite a hard one, I always think, to answer.
A hard one, usually, but I think that the way that Douglas Costa has settled at Bayern Munich, even in the Super Cup against Wolfsburg, within the first 2 minutes, the way that he just screeched past Vierinha was just a showing of how difficult Bundesliga defenders were going to find it coping with him. No player has made more assists in the Bundesliga so far this season, 12 so far in 18 games it is, although Costa was actually out injured for part of the last part of 2015, which makes that tally even more impressive. So I think Douglas Costa has to be my number one. But if I can give a quick shout out to Julian Weigl of Borussia Dortmund, a guy who has never played in the Bundesliga before, only 19 years old as well, and really excelled at the base of their midfield.
What you got on this week, mate? Are you off to any games in the near future as well?
Those plans are still very much in formulation at the moment, but I think I will be going to a Bundesliga ground somewhere on Saturday. Just where exactly that is at the moment is still very much TBC.
And we'll be plundering you for content from that as well. Archie, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Rob. Cheers.
Okay, we'll speak to Andrew Driver, the De Graafschap midfielder, very shortly. But first, let's go through some of the week's headlines in European football. Even without Neymar, Barcelona beat Malaga 2-1 away to go top of La Liga. Atletico, who had been the league leaders, were held to a goalless draw by Sevilla. Barca face Atletico next Saturday.
Zinedine Zidane dropped points for the first time as Real Madrid boss. No Gareth Bale due to his calf injury, and they were held by lowly Real Betis. It finished 1-1. Karim Benzema with Madrid's goal.
Giuseppe Rossi has joined Levante on loan from Fiorentina for the season. The deal runs until June. The striker's had his serious knee injuries and has only played 11 games in Serie A this season.
There was a winning debut for Jose Pesero for Porto, having taken over from Julian Lopetegui. His side beat Maritimo, but they're still third. Sporting atop, Benfica a second. They both won two at the weekend.
Standard Liège have signed Victor Valdez until the end of the season from Manchester United on loan. The Spain international and former Barcelona goalkeeper only made two appearances for United.
Well, without Valdez, Standard were beaten by Ghent to a top and going great guns again in Belgium. That win for the title holders came after back-to-back victories against the other traditional powerhouses, Anderlecht and Club Brugge.
So those are your headlines for the week. We will take an in-depth look at Liga shortly on the show. But first, it's time for our interview with Andrew Driver, the former England and Scotland youth international who spent time in the MLS and, of course, was a regular at Hearts in Scotland. He's now playing his football in the Eredivisie with De Graafschap, and I caught up with him earlier in the week.
This is Football in Europe special interview.
Okay, to continue our series looking at British players who have made the move to try their football abroad, we speak now to Andrew Driver, who's playing in the Eredivisie at the moment. Andrew, thanks for coming on the podcast.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So you're playing in the Eredivisie. This is your first season in Dutch football. You're playing for De Graafschap. How are you finding, what differences are you finding in terms of football compared to England and Scotland?
The biggest thing, the difference, obviously, I played in Scotland for a long time, is the difference is I think the facilities are much higher. They do like to play a passing game of football here, and it's a little bit more on the ground than it was in Scotland. But I think the biggest difference I notice is the better facilities, and I'm loving it so far. It's a really good experience.
I know you had to go over for a trial initially, I think, and then did you have an injury for the start of the season?
No, it was kind of funny. I went away to, I was in the MLS for 2 years. Obviously, I came back and I went to Aberdeen, and I was only there for 2 months and didn't play. So I'd kind of not played for a while. On paper, it looked like I hadn't played for a year when it technically was only a few months. But I wasn't really in great shape either. So I had to go over and went in a wee trial, and the rest is as it is.
So you're in something of a relegation scrap at the moment, but you got a big win last weekend. How important was that in terms of the survival fight, and how are you feeling about it in general?
We're up against it. We knew we would be firm from day one. I think our budget is the lowest by far in the league. The guys kind of scraped up through the playoffs last year, so we knew it was going to be difficult, but I think we've got a good young team. We're learning all the time, so the first half of the season of cards, we obviously only won the one game. But we've had the break, and I think we've reinvigorated, and we went away to Turkey and obviously got a massive result of the weekend, which I think after you win and get a result like that, it all turns rosy again and you can take on the world.
And you're playing in some iconic stadiums as well. I mean, I think before the winter break, you went to Ajax and were beaten, but what was the experience of going to the Amsterdam Arena?
It was amazing. It's funny, I've actually got a picture of a kid in an Ajax strip. Obviously, Ajax are a massive team, so we actually played fairly well as well. We could have matched a point on another day, but which was a bonus. It was a great experience, and I've got to look forward to going playing in some other good stadiums. Even that's the good thing about the Eredivisie. The smaller teams usually have small stadiums that get quite full, so you get decent atmosphere. The organised fan sections and everything, and I think they're a little bit old school in terms of the way they watch the games. I think it's kind of like England in the 90s in a way. They're kind of stuck at that kind of fan base, so which is great. I think when you're playing, you want to be playing in a good atmosphere and have the fans behind you.
Earlier in the season, and actually a couple of times on, we've had Darren O'Dea, who made a sort of similar move to you, Scotland and MLS. And he says, once you make the move to the MLS, that's when you start to get calls from people outside of England about different leagues and a whole world of volume. He went to play in Ukraine and has been to India. Did you find that move to the MLS suddenly opened you up to a new market almost?
I don't know. It's kind of strange. There isn't many British or Irish people who do make moves into into different markets. So I think it probably will. But I think the most important thing that he probably has the same as I do is that he's got a willingness to go to these places. It's hard for some people to just pack their bags and go somewhere else. So it was something. Sorry, my dog's playing at my feet here.
That's all right. We roll with it. Do you want to deal with the dog or do you want to stop?
I've shut him out. I'm all right. He just thought I was playing because I'm walking around the living room.
So when I was doing a bit of reading up before, Andy, I saw that your wife is from America. You met her while you were over there.
Yeah.
So this surely is a massive difference for her.
Oh well, yeah, I know that was the question when I moved over. Would she like it? But I think she's happy. She's worked all her life, so she's happy. She's had a year off not being able to work, and she's going doing the European coffee shops and everything. So it actually moved out quite well. I don't know if she wants to go back to America now. So,
and how do you think you're performing as an individual in that team?
Well, as I've said before, I think the lifestyle has helped me out this year. I had a slow start because I was behind in catching up in pre-season and everything. But the last couple of months, I've started to get back to my old self. When I was young, I was performing pretty well. And I think it went backwards a little bit for a couple of years. Injuries and stuff caught up with me. But I've had a long time without injury now, and I'm really enjoying it. Obviously, it'd be nicer if we were winning more games, but I can feel myself and see myself getting much better, and I think my best performance was at the weekend there, so I just need to keep building on it.
One of the games I did see this season live was the 6-3 with PSV. The game in which you scored, and I thought we've got to get him on the show. That was an insane match of football. I think that was back in October. You lost 6-3 at home, but a brilliant game. I mean,
it was insane, wasn't it? Like,
it was.
We were 3-0 down after 20 minutes, never even touched the ball. And then to go to 3-0 was just, I think, no one would have ever imagined it. It was unbelievable. It was it shows like our little stadium. We've only got a 10,000 seat stadium, but the atmosphere when we get going is pretty amazing. The place gets buzzing.
And are you even thinking about next season yet? I mean, or are you just taking the season as it comes and then working out what happens next?
Well, I think you've just got to concentrate on football.
I
know what it's like. I've been there. I've had to go on trial. I've had to search for teams and stuff. So I think hopefully if I keep doing as well as I can, you never know, if we stay up, then we'll talk to the team. And if we don't, we'll hopefully get something else. But I think you just got to, if you're not playing well, you don't have any options. So
the technical stuff, where you had a guy as well who was on in the Ajax academy, Jamie Lawrence, and he talks about when he was in academies at QPR and at Arsenal, and then he moved to Ajax, how the level of technicality in the way that the Dutch went about their football. Are you noticing that on a game to game basis compared to what you experienced in Britain?
The biggest technical thing that I notice is they want to play out from the back all the time.
So is that every team wants to do that?
Pretty much every team, yeah. Right. So the goalkeeper gets it, and you know, in England, everyone just goes forward. Here, everyone just like the defenders spread out, and they always try and play a short pass from the back. It kind of annoys me at times because I watch the highlights every week, and half the goals come from them losing it in bad areas. So being British, you're just like, what are they doing? But you got to appreciate like they do try to play it, and I think that's the Dutch way. They want to play good football, and you got to commend them for doing it. Sometimes I wish they'd just do it in better areas sometimes.
And tell us a little bit about the Graafschap as a club. Why are you enjoying this club in particular so much?
I think the thing with the Graafschap is it's a small town. It's a small town called Dutchem. In like a rural area, so it's a pretty small club. But I think the benefits of having a small club is it's family run, and everybody knows everyone, and everyone's great, and they do a lot in the community, and we have functions all the time with all the fans and stuff. So it's a nice atmosphere to go to work in, if that makes sense. So. And the fans have been brilliant this year. We've only got 8 points, but the fans haven't turned on us at all. They've backed us all the way. So it's really been it's a nice place to work in.
Andrew, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it. Will you come back on at the end of the season and give us a recap of how the whole campaign went?
Yeah, hopefully we'll have stayed up and it'll be all happiness.
Absolutely. Best of luck for the second half of the season, Andrew.
No problem.
I'll leave you to tend to the dog as well.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
An absolute pleasure to speak to Andrew Driver, and the best of luck to him for the rest of the Eredivisie season. Chris, final part of the show, we'll quickly look at matters in Liga at the weekend. Hatem Ben Arfa is playing so good at the moment. I cannot believe he was the guy who looked too stone, too heavy at Hull and was poor at the tail end of his Newcastle career. What's he been up to in France?
Well, ever since he's gone to Nice, who stuck by him, remember, because he couldn't play for them due to FIFA rules for the first 6 months or so.
Because he played for two clubs already.
He's playing like the talent he is, and we know he is. We saw that briefly in the Premier League. But he's firing Nice into a Champions League spot, which would be quite an achievement for that club. Big city, new stadium, have been there for Euro 2016 in the summer. It's all set up and they've got their talisman now, and in a league behind Paris Saint-Germain, which is poor, they're making the most of it. But he's got 10 goals, first time in his career that he's got double figures, which is impressive. And he scored in the weekend in a win over Lorient.
You mentioned, of course, he missed out a lot of last season because of those FIFA rules. So he's been so good this season, looking so skillful, so sharp.
Yeah.
And trim. Surely some other clubs are looking at him now.
Yeah, well, they are. First of all, he's played his way into the France squad. So it's one of those that if he were
Who
to...
Who could have imagined that
exactly
a year ago? I mean,
you know, if he does well for France, then all of a sudden he opens himself up to, well, almost every club, because talent is there.
So is his contract is expiring.
His contract's up. So L'Equipe of Limp did him with Inter. What I was hoping, and it looks to be the case, he's not going to go anywhere now, because for Nice's point of view, they've stuck by him.
You're talking a January transfer.
Yeah, right. And I just think, come on, stick there. If you get them into the Champions League, then, because Nice won't get any money for him, potentially, but what
at
they
least
would get
them into the
then they get Champions League football and all the finances there.
If you haven't seen any of Ben Arfa this season, go on YouTube, put Ben Arfa Nice into YouTube and watch some of the skills he's... I don't think there's been a more... I've struggled to think of many more skillful players in Europe this season. At the weekend as well, Lyon played against Marseille at home. It was probably their first big game since their move to their brand new stadium. We had Andy Brassel on the show last week and we kept a little bit of the interview back because I asked him, you know, why did Lyon... they played out a 1-1 draw with Marseille in the end between two teams that have massively underwhelmed, 8th and 9th in the league. But Austin, why did Lyon need this new stadium, apart from the fact that Euro 2016 is coming up?
Mainly because Jean-Michel Aulas, their president, has always had an eye on the business model of Bayern and Arsenal. Being a club unlike any other in France that owns its own stadium and therefore generates a lot of money, then he's hoping it will generate from the start an extra 70, 80 million a year. And, you know, they've got other stuff lined up that other teams with big stadiums like Lille, for example, of course, when they moved into the Stade Pierre Mauroy, there was all this talk about all the concerts they were going to have and stuff. It never really quite happened. And they're paying a big rent as well, whereas Lyon won't have that because they own the stadium. They'll be trousering all the profits that they make. You know, they've got very high-class hospitality facilities. Rihanna's playing a gig there in the summer. they've got a plan that's lined up, and there's a lot of local excitement about it. They seem to have bridged initial worries about decent transport access, because you can get there in 15 minutes from the centre of town and in 10 minutes from the airport, which is, you know, a huge step forward, really. So it's about that. Although, interestingly, after this weekend, they're no longer the only club in France or in the French league that own their own stadium, because Gazelec Ajaccio, who've been renting their stadium off the council for 55 years, have just completed the purchase of theirs. A little bit smaller, but still interesting.
Andy Brassel speaking to us last week. Chris, finally on France, Paris Saint-Germain took on Angers, who have been brilliant this season. They were third and they were second for much of the season, but PSG beat them 5-1.
Yeah, Di Maria was absolutely fantastic. two brilliant finishes. As you'd expect, Angel Di Maria against Angers should be playing like that. And as we know, it's how they're doing the Champions League this season. But Paris Saint-Germain had 21 points clear. They still are because Monaco in second beat Toulouse. But the other amazing thing is they have a plus 46 goal difference.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Next best is plus 11. I mean, it's not just a... I don't know, what's more than a one-horse race?
Can you just tell me about Angel Di Maria in a minute? I'm just going to have a lovely sip of Lille.
it's still tea. If you...
Oh, my God. I mean, I actually think I'm in a tropical location.
No, when you have a Lille, you think you're at school again having pizza and chips.
Oh, Lilt. Get it now in a nearby
shop. This is an interesting thing. Where did you get it from? Was it one of those strange, like...
No, I didn't buy Lilt. Well,
where
I
did you get
Fanta.
It?
This is a story. Chris was asking if I had a beer on the train. I didn't even have it. It was a joke.
Right, sorry, yeah. Because, you know, do you know what I mean? Like
I would never buy a can of Lilt.
Yeah, because you can't get it everywhere. So it's like those slightly weird news agencies.
I know what you mean.
Where you get loads of... Like, you get snaps still.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like, what suppliers are supplying you? Because everyone else is supplying, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, lovely, refreshing Lilt.
Angel Di Maria.
Yeah.
I can't even think of a segue between the two. But Angel Di Maria, two ridiculous goals. Can you tell us about those in the win?
Yeah, brilliant finishes. One was they were both audacious chips, really. As I mentioned, it's Angers at home. You'd expect Angel Di Maria to be brilliant, but he is. And it's how they're doing the Champions League. They've won the title. Can they go through the season unbeaten? No one's done that in Ligue 1 history. They are edging ever closer. And I think they equaled the club record for consecutive victories, which they can break at Saint-Étienne at the weekend, which is a hard game. But Paris Saint-Germain are just absolutely flying.
Di Maria's first goal, like this volley from 25 yards out of the goalkeeper who's off his line, was just absolutely ridiculous.
Do you know what? His second goal was almost better, I think, because it was a pure finish.
Yeah.
Because the keeper's closer and he managed to get that elevation and get it back down. But in the midst of one of their goals as well, which I think Van der Veel put in, Ibrahimovic is just doing kick-ups on the edge of the penalty area.
Yeah, he was taking the mick.
It's that easy.
Yeah, look that up on YouTube as well. I think that's all we have time for on Football in Europe presented by Lilt. Chris, is there anything else?
Yeah, you've got another story from your wonderful journey back from Liverpool Lime Street.
Have I? Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention this at the start.
Yeah.
I saw Eder, the Swansea striker, formerly of Portuguese football, buying a Burger King. Now, how do you feel about a player eating fast food after a game?
I don't mind it. They often have pizzas delivered to the living room. The living room?
He was on for 4 minutes.
Maybe it had a very vigorous warm down or warm up.
I hope Guidolin did not see that.
Maybe Guidolin ordered it. That's his secret.
Yeah. 20 whoppers all around. Chris, what you got on this week?
I am off to Switzerland and then at the weekend.
That should be fun.
At the weekend, do you know what? I'm actually going to see Dulwich Hamlet.
Are you? Oh, you're doing the
Fallen
thing.
Fallen on my sword.
You gave me stick earlier in the season for going to Dulwich Hamlet.
Well, I tried to get one to go to Millwall because I said that's a proper footballing day out in South London. Yeah. But no,
it's cheap though at Dulwich Hamlet.
Is it? I'm hoping for like some sort of camembert cheese roll or something as well.
There's none of that. There is organic burgers.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for downloading the show. Remember, keep drinking Lilt and...
You'll get a sore throat.
I've taken this too far. And we'll be back next Monday.
This is Football in Europe.